So when it comes to killing plants, it's not a matter of if you will kill a plant, it's just a matter of when. And really, I think that killing plants doesn't mean you're bad at plants, it just means that you're a plant parent. But the issue is people can carry a lot of shame around plant death. And I've heard too many stories of people having a plant, killing it, and then deciding that they're a plant killer and just like throwing their hands up and saying, I'm not doing plants anymore just because of mishap that happened with a plant. So a couple of years ago, I sat down with my friend Cassidy from Succulents and Sunshine to unpack plant guilt that is associated with plant death, and particularly with succulents, because succulents are often touted as easy care plants. They're not, but when people kill them, they think that there's something wrong with them. This conversation gets emotional, it gets vulnerable, and it talks about why even experienced plant experts lose plants, and it actually could be the best thing to ever happen to you. So for this installment of the Best of Growing Joy series, where we pull old episodes and refresh them, I thought, what better topic to share with you than this one. Hope you enjoy it. Welcome to the Growing Joy with Plants podcast, where we not only learn how to care for plants successfully, but how to simply and affordably use our plant babies to cultivate more joy in our lives by doing so. I'm Maria, former plant killer turned happy plant lady, author of Growing Joy, The Plant Lover's Guide to Cultivating Happiness, speaker, podcaster, and most importantly, your new best plant friend. On Growing Joy with Plants, you'll find conversations about houseplant care, gardening tutorials, and wellness through the lens of plants.
Plant care is self-care on Growing Joy.
Welcome to the Growing Joy podcast.
Thank you. I'm super excited to be here.
We have a little bit of a beautiful background noise of your fancy 3D printers for your snappy pots. I love it. They started beeping right as we started counting down.
So funny. Yes, they have taken over my life and my recording studio. So they've got a little quiet hum in the background, hopefully.
I love it. Well, because I just mentioned your snappy pots. Before we dive into our conversation today, do you want to give a brief introduction to our audience of everything Succulents and Sunshine?
Yes, I'd love to. So I run the website Succulents and Sunshine. We teach people how to grow succulents, even if you don't live in the perfect climate, which I really never have. And most people don't. So it's been really fun. I teach mostly how to grow indoors through our blog, our YouTube channel. And then just in the last year, we released a line of pots designed for succulents. And those are snappy pots. And they work for other plants too. And we actually have some snappy boxes for non-plant lovers, but they have little decorations that you can swap out and change out throughout the year, which is super fun. But yeah, so I've been growing succulents and teaching how to grow them for a little over 10 years. And I love it. I wouldn't change it for the world.
Yeah, you've built such an amazing brand. And I have to share this kooky story of how we've almost crossed multiple times, multiple years ago. And this was, I think, right when I was starting my podcast, formerly known as Bloom and Grow Radio. I was having imposter syndrome and some like doubts about whether or not I should do it. And I'm a huge fan. Shout out Pat Flynn. We both love Pat Flynn. We're followers of Pat Flynn. You were a guest on his podcast and he interviewed you about being in the niche of succulents. And I remember hearing your story on this podcast and hearing how you built this incredible brand, this unbelievable business built off of succulents, which was even more of a niche than what I wanted to build, you know, my podcast around. And I remember feeling so inspired by your story. Cut to, you know, years later, maybe 6 months ago, I got a random, you know, message on from my website. And it was you asking me if I would come speak to your community because you have a community. And I remember getting like full body shivers, you know, those like goosebumps that you get being like, oh my God, this is a wild, like, universe given like full circle moment that was just like, I think when I responded to you, it was like in all caps because I was just like, I cannot believe you're reaching out to me right now when you were this moment of me listening to this podcast being like, yes, if she can do it, I can do it. And now like we have worked together and we're friends. So it's like so wild to me.
Yes. Well, and I feel like it was the same for me when I heard your interview with Pat, which is when I reached out to you. I was trying to think of people that would be a great fit to share with our Succulent Lovers Club. And I was driving somewhere, probably for like a holiday, going to visit family and heard your interview. And I'm like, we need to have Maria come talk. Like everything just resonated. And it's been so fun that we've gotten to be friends since then.
Yeah, truly. So thank you, Pat Flynn, and any other plantrepreneurs, entrepreneurs, you should definitely go check out everything Pat has to offer. He's got a great podcast, Smart Passive Income. And I've been a member of his community for multiple years as well. His community was actually a huge inspiration for mine. But also, you know, as we've rebranded and moving into Growing Joy and exploring the experience of wellness through the lens of plants, I was thinking about really wanting to do an episode on, you know, the concept of plant death and plants dying. And you came to mind because I feel like from the moment we've met, we have such deep conversations immediately. And so I was like, well, you could come on and teach succulents, or you could come on and we could talk about death and like really heady kind of more deep spiritual stuff. So I'm excited that you're down for this conversation.
Yes, I love it. It's like the anti-teaching, right? It's like, I can teach you how to keep plants alive, or I can tell you all the ways that they can die and why it's okay.
Right. And why it's okay if you kill your plants. And I think too, you know, you are a succulent expert. For me, I feel like part of my job as a, you know, houseplant person is saying, debunking the myth that succulents are easy to take care of. Everyone thinks I'm a plant killer. I can't even keep a succulent alive. And I'm like, I'm a plant enthusiast, arguably a plant expert, and I still can't keep succulents alive. Like succulents are hard to keep alive. So if you're in the succulent space, you're definitely probably going to have killed a plant or two. If you're in the house plant space, if you are a plant parent, plant death is part of the journey. It's not, you know, a negative thing. Well, it can be negative, but it's not something that is only reserved for bad plant parents. And on the heels of coming out of the pandemic, when I think a lot of people got really into plants and really expanded their collections, now we're getting more active. We're leaving our homes a little bit more. We're a little bit more distracted. I think it's very normal. A lot of people are kind of entering different seasons of life and maybe losing interest in their plants, or maybe getting overwhelmed and needing to part with a few. And you can make it mean a lot about you. What's your take on how plant parents can really take plant death so personally?
Well, I think it's because you've put so much time and effort into something, right? And it's not like, I think for most people, it's not like they just set a plant there and just expect it to live on its own. Like they're learning about it. They're putting time and effort and love into this thing. And then to have it die, it's kind of like this slap in the face, like, wait, what? But I did my best and I tried. And so I think it becomes really personal. And we've talked about a lot how, you know, plants are kind of a reflection of us personally too. So I think when we see a plant die, we almost feel like there's this little part of us that died too, you know, whether it's because we put in all that time and effort or because we connected or related to that plant in some way and now it's dead. And so it feels like, you know, part of us is dying too. There's a lot of different ways I think that that applies.
Yeah. And that sense of failure. I don't think any of us like to, you know, I think both of us have kind of talked about our struggles with people pleasing offline and, you know, that sense of failure that you can feel, you know, you want to do the right thing. You want to have the photos on Instagram. You want to look like the Pinterest photos that you're pinning. And, you know, you want your plants to look the way they look when they're in a garden center and you come home and then all of a sudden you feel like you failed a plant, but failed yourself. But before we dive so deep, I think we should start by blowing up our own spot. Everybody's killed a plant. So I thought it would be fun for us to start with our own plant fail, plant, you know, death stories, just to kind of let you know, listeners, there's really no shame in, you know, whatever I always say, whatever weird thing you've done to your plant, I've probably done it and I've probably done something even weirder. So I was thinking it'd be fun to start with, you know, a fun plant fail or two. So do you have a recent one or a memorable one you want to share?
Recent and memorable for sure. So you talked about, you know, coming out of the pandemic, how a lot of people have maybe a lot more plants than they can take care of, or you know, it's gotten to be a lot. And while I have always had a lot of plants, this season in my life, I have too many plants for the amount that I'm able to put in and take care of them. And the one that just like drove home to me that I need to reduce my plant number is I had a really, really beautiful Echeveria succulent. So it's like this purple rosette and it got mealybugs. And I treated it a couple times. And it kept getting them and it kept getting them. I could never quite eradicate it. And I went out of town for 2 or 3 weeks and came back and it was just covered. It was like, it grosses me out to think about it. And it just went the whole thing into the trash. Thankfully, it was in a pot that I could get rid of because I think the whole soil was infested. So it just made that walk of shame to the trash and I had to throw it away. And it just drove home for me, like, I need to be able to pay attention to my succulents and give them a little bit more attention and care than I currently am, because that wouldn't have happened if I was checking in on it more frequently, or if I only had 200 instead of 400, or, you know, like if there were less of them, I could catch it sooner and I could eradicate it faster. So that's been a big one for me. It's just, I feel like most of my recent plant deaths are like, oh, I wasn't paying attention here. And this one kind of slipped under the radar and, you know, it did not make it. But that one made me so sad because it was such a beautiful plant like 3-4 months ago and sadly did not survive.
R.I.P. How do you feel, like, what's your approach to, like, deciding when it's time to toss versus when it's time to try treating again?
Yeah, mealybugs, I will say more and more, if something has an infestation or if I'm pretty sure it has, like, an infection, I'm leaning towards, like, just getting rid of it. Maybe part of that's because I'm trying to reduce my plant number, but usually if it's like one or two little bugs and you can see them and the plant is still looking normal, there's not a lot of distortion to it, I think you're totally fine to treat it. And one of the big things I think that people miss is you've got to treat the plant, but you also need to treat the soil and then isolate it. So I know one thing that I'm guilty of with this one is I did not isolate it. And so I've noticed a couple mealybugs have shifted over to the plants around it, but they still look healthy. So I'm just treating those and making sure I treat the soil and paying closer attention to them. But I think there's this tipping point where if it's just a couple little, you know, couple little mealybugs, it's a lot easier to treat. Whereas if the whole stem is coated in them, like this one was, oh, it's so bad. At that point, I think you just toss it. It's not worth the risk to your other plants, even if you're isolating and you spend so much effort to, you know, treat and get rid of the mealybugs, that I think it can end up just damaging the succulent or the plant as well. There's this fine line between the treatment getting rid of the mealybugs and doing damage versus the mealybugs just doing damage and killing it. So there's maybe a gray area, but I'd say if it's a handful, not a big deal. If it's completely covered, toss it and move on. Get a new one. And, you know, if you want,
get a new one and try again. I think too, like, from lessons learned, something I say all the time is, you know, don't have a watering routine, but have that plant care routine. So even if you have plants that you're not watering every week, like, the importance of at least checking in with them once a week for those pests. And it sounds like that's exactly kind of what bumped you back. And that's something, you know, right? We all know that. But you need that kind of knock over the head sometimes to kind of bump you back. I also feel like time is passing so quickly right now. Like, I was talking with my husband this morning, like, it just, I'm like, you know, we're recording this in December and I'm still like, where was August? That I think the beauty that plants can kind of give you is sometimes they do give you that opportunity to just kind of, like, knock you back into the present for a minute to be like, whoa, like, I need to spend a little bit more time paying attention to these plants. But also, if that's the case, there's probably other aspects of yourself in your life you have to pay attention to as well, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Well, and I think you talked about this in your book where, like, there is a perfect number for you, you know, perfect number of plants, but also that it does shift throughout your life, even maybe throughout the year. And I think that's what I've realized is actually during the pandemic, I needed a lot more plants so that I could show people more of what to do. But now that things have kind of slowed down a bit and I'm not as actively working on that, like, forward facing, creating more videos, and now it's just coming down to caring for them, that's when I'm realizing, okay, now I need to cut back and just focus on the ones I really like, the ones that I know how to care for the best, the ones that grow best for me in my climate. And not worry about all of the, you know, all the cool new rare ones that pop up. I've realized too, I'm not a rare plant collector. I'm like, give me the basics, give me the stuff that grows really well, that's not fussy, and I will do a lot better that way.
Yeah, I think it's important too for people to know that even people like you who have literally had a business about succulents for 10 years, the size of your plant collection can ebb and flow. And you're actually being a good plant parent when you catch yourself in a moment when you're saying, oh, my collection has gotten too big to the point that I'm not caring for anything well because I don't have enough bandwidth. So it's actually in my best intention to you know, it's for the best if I reduce my plant collection in order to care for those, give, you know, 10 plants 100% instead of 100 plants 10%, you know? And that number, your plant number, it changes, you know? It changes in different seasons of life. Like I said earlier, like in the pandemic, I think everybody's plant numbers probably increased by about 25%. But that means that you might have to reduce your plant number by 25% as we kind of move back into our faster paced world. Another thing you mentioned about when to toss versus when to treat, something I've noticed too is the emotional connection to the plant. So, you know, if you've been a member, if you've been a listener of my podcast, you know that I have had this lime tree since the beginning of my plant parenthood. And this poor thing, its name is Limey. His name is Limey. I rehomed him with my mom in Florida this year because we have put him through the ringer. And like, he's a lime tree. He doesn't want to live indoors in New York City, right? Like, that's not where they're supposed to be. And it's interesting though, like Limey has been brought to the brink of death so many times. He's had scale, he's had spider mites, but the emotional connection there has made it so hard for me to let him go. To the point that I literally brought him on a plane, flew, like applied for a visa. Like Limey got a passport to fly to Florida. I had to apply with the Florida State of Agriculture, Department of Agriculture. And, you know, I did all of that because it felt good. But also, I think you do have to hit your moment where, you know, you're like, okay, I think I've done everything for this plant. And I think it's in everybody's best interest if we just move on. And when I rehomed Limey, when we set him up in my mom's house, he got leaf miners. And my mom was beside herself. She was like texting me every day. I realized I had projected, you know, she had like absorbed this stress that I was carrying about this plant. And she was like, I don't know what to do, you know, blah, 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 blah. And I just kind of gave her permission. I was like, Mom, it's okay if Limey doesn't make it. Like, it was a great story. He's lived a great life. Like, we've tried our best. And, you know, I release the attachment to him needing to survive. And he's still surviving. But it was an interesting lesson in seeing my emotional attachment and how healthy slash unhealthy it was, even if it did make for a really good story.
Yes, there's been a number of plants, like either someone's given it to me or I got it for some special occasion, or, you know, there's some sort of connection to it in that way. And it does make it a lot harder to let go of it. I know a lot of people, this is something kind of new to me, but like, I think the term someone used for it was like generational plant gifting, where, you know, you get a jade plant from your grandmother or your parent and you want to pass it on to your children. That's a lot of pressure for a plant and for you. And there is a point where, you know, a plant's not going to survive. Like hopefully it will continue to grow or cuttings from it or whatever it may be. But I think it's really tricky when you put yourself in that position where it has to survive. Almost, I feel like a lot of times we end up doing too much for it and then it dies because we've been either over caring for it or fussing with it too much instead of just letting it grow and seeing what happens.
Yeah, that actually reminds me. You shared your plant death. I'll share this plant death. So my grandma came over from Italy and grew sage every year in her front yard. My mom, when my grandma passed, dug up that sage, brought it, and my mom moved it from two homes. And so we've had Nani sage in our homes. My parents moved to Florida. My mom dug some of the sage up and gave it to me. I moved to the woods and went through a really bad period of depression where I was not caring for my plants and I had completely forgotten about the sage. We were also trying to keep it indoors because it was snowing and it was in a pot and the sage didn't make it. And the guilt that I carried for killing my grandma's sage plant, I mean, I didn't speak about it publicly. This is the first time I'm talking about it on the podcast. I didn't tell my mom for like 8 months, you know, and it was painful. I carried so much shame about it. It was my grandma's heirloom. I call them heirloom plants, but I like generational plants too. But then, you know, I realized like my grandma is living through me in my dedication to plants and gardening in this. Like I feel her with me every day. I have a weird sense that I feel like she's like in the trees on my property, but my grandma's with me as I educate the world, you know, help the world like live vicariously through our plant collection. So is it so much about the sage, or is it about the feeling of me being connected to my grandma? And how can I facilitate that feeling of connection instead of that attachment to this physical thing? That gets really deep. And I know it doesn't apply to everybody's scenarios, but especially with those heirloom plants, I think that's a very interesting kind of thing to look at, and definitely a very painful, you know, process that I went through this year.
Yeah. And I think the idea that, like you're saying, like you felt so much shame and guilt around killing this plant. I don't think anyone wants that for someone they know, you know, whether they're alive and you gave them a plant or whether they've passed on. I don't think most of us don't want other people to feel terrible. And so, you know, buying a new one every couple months in their honor, you know, just thinking about it in a different way. I do think there's that part of us that wants to physically have some sort of token or thing that we can remember them by. But I think you're totally right that it's really the spirit of it and just in their memory, continuing to care for other plants or do other things, that's where it really counts in my book.
Yeah. And I think we can apply that to most of our plants, right? So we've kind of shared some of our, you know, our plant fails. And so let's get practical, right? So how can we turn a plant fail into a positive experience? And I think we've just hit on something that's really important. Can you recognize why you're feeling like a failure because of this plant, right? And figure out, okay, is there something deeper going on here? Like, is this a grandma thing, or is this, am I really upset about the plant, or am I really upset about whatever emotional attachment I have, and how can I kind of transmute that into something else? But also, like, what lessons can you learn, right? I learned with my grandma sage, you can't overwinter sage indoors after it's been living outside, however much you want to, like, that's going to be very tricky. And if you're overwintering sage, you probably have to water it more than I did. What lessons have you learned from plant fails that you feel like you've been able to take to all of your collection?
Yeah, so the mealybug experience, I think, is one that comes up over and over where it's like, I really need to be paying closer attention. And by closer attention, I don't mean like I need to be like inspecting every single plant every day, but just actually looking at them more closely, you know, instead of just like, oh, walking by, cool, they look good. But having that right number has been a big one for me. But also, big thing that I've learned is, even within the world of succulents, not all succulents need the same amount of light, the same amount of water, the same temperatures. And so recognizing that each individual genus or species is going to have some variations, as well as each individual like specimen. So I had two zebra plants. I had them in identical pots planted side by side, watered them the same amount, right? Because they look identical. And one of them did really, really well. And the other one didn't do super well, you know, and it's over time. But what I learned was one of them just put off a ton of roots really fast and it got a lot bigger. And then because the pot it was in, it was super, super root bound, it started rotting from the inside out because water kept getting trapped in the roots. So this other one that grew slower actually did better, whereas the one that grew fast didn't do as well because it ended up getting some rot inside and needed to be repotted. So I think that's what I keep coming back to, is like every plant's a little bit different.
Yeah.
It's okay if they don't, all survive. Taking time to like learn that lesson and kind of look back and say, what might I have done wrong that I can, you know, apply moving forward, which this doesn't quite apply in this moment, but something that I've also realized, I think most people forget, is plants actually die in the wild too.
a great point.
Right? I think we like look at nature and assume that everything lives for eternity. So I live right by the Saguaro National Forest. And I want to say it was 2 years ago, there was a news article that came out about how a ton of saguaros were dying because we'd had unusually humid weather and it was causing them to rot. You know, these are like hundreds of years old. It happens even if you're not doing anything. So I don't know, for me, that's kind of lightened the pressure too. But just for me, it comes down to, you can learn the lesson by just looking at what you've done and seeing what worked and then seeing what didn't work and trying to tweak and try again for the next one.
And you have the choice to choose the perspective that you want to approach this with. So if we really zoom out, I love your example for the saguaro national forest. Also, oh my God, seeing saguaros in real life is like the most majestic, magical experience ever. Zooming out, most of our houseplants and succulents are not designed to live in our homes. So a lot of the time, you know, Daryl Chang, one of my friends' houseplant journal, he always says, like, you don't kill the plant. The plant didn't make it under your environment. Like, you're not a plant killer. We're bringing these plants that are designed to live in 60 to 80% humidity. If you're a tropical foliage houseplant, succulents are a little different, but, you know, my collection, my house, I have a hygrometer. It's 8 inches of snow outside. My house is like 25 degrees humidity. It's also like 69 degrees because it's so, oil is so expensive. We keep our house insanely cold this winter. Our tropical houseplants that thrive in 80% humidity and full sun are not designed to thrive in the conditions that we put them in. Yes, they adjust. Yes, they become hardy. Yes, greenhouses kind of taper, like allow for them to adapt to, you know, that transitional experience. But I think it's really realistic to understand that, of course, not all of the plants are going to make it because they weren't designed to live in your house, like plain and simple. So I think even just kind of giving yourself that, like to put the pin in the balloon and like just let a little bit of air out on the pressure of like, these plants really aren't meant to be indoors. And it's amazing that we care for them. And it's amazing that, you know, we've figured out all of these amazing ways to have them thrive. But it's understandable that not all of them make it, number one, just in an indoor environment. And number two, with our personalities, with what types of plants work for us. And I think the point that you made is like some plants just genetically or like just the seed, you know, that particular plant is just not going to be as vigorous as another one. That's so interesting too, because the zebra plants, this is Haworthia that we're talking about, right?
Yep.
Yeah, like those are super hardy plants in general, I'd say, of the succulent family. So that's also really interesting that that was your experience with that plant, which I feel like is, you know, one of the tried and trues.
Yeah, well, and it's one that like if people want to grow succulents inside, that is the one to get because it's one that does work well in an indoor climate because it doesn't need a lot of light. It can go a long period of time without water. So it's one of the few that I feel like is fairly well suited to growing indoors. But most people are buying these echeverias or, you know, really colorful varieties that don't like a lot of water. So that's great if that's your care style, but they need a ton of light. And even on a windowsill, most of them aren't going to get enough light. And so I think that's the most common thing I see, like you're saying, with people bringing plants inside and just assuming it's going to work. Your house is a very different climate than outside wherever it was naturally growing, or even just different than the greenhouse that it was being cultivated in before you bought it. There's so many changes when you move a plant into your space. And Deborah Lee Baldwin, that writes a lot about succulents, she also talks about how you have microclimates. And it's much more true outside where you have these little pockets of places that have a different climate, but it's true inside too. Like my office, because we have all these 3D printers running, it gets super hot. So everything in my office dries out a lot faster. Whereas in my kitchen, there's a lot more airflow and it's cooler and it's just totally different. Like things don't need as much water in there. So paying attention to those different areas that you're growing in makes a big difference as well.
Totally. What about the concept of, okay, I've just killed a plant. Am I going to get another plant and try again and learn? Or am I going to decide, you know what, this isn't the plant for me? And I can start when I moved to my first log cabin in the woods 2 years ago, I was hyper fixated on alocasia. And I was talking about it on the podcast a lot. I was like, I can't wait. I was living with my parents for 6 months. I was like, I'm moving. I can't wait to grow my plant collection. We got to this house. I had no idea how dark it was. It was so dark and so dry. And I still was like, I'm obsessed with alocasias. I want to do alocasias. I went and bought alocasias and then I quickly, oh, and I did this in the winter. I did this in January. Worst time to buy houseplants, right? Under, you know, 10 inches of snow. And, you know, those alocasias like crisped up and died pretty quickly. And I think for me, it took 2 or 3. I think the first one I was like, okay, that was just a oopsies, you know, like learning curve. The second one, I think I put it under glass, but then the glass didn't really work. I experimented. I tried some different things. I tried to water it more and it still just wasn't looking very good. And then at that point, you know, I thought, okay, like maybe alocasia just aren't for me and that's okay. And yes, I like talked a big game about how I'm going to be like an alocasia girl now. And that's okay. Like people can change and reality isn't as, you know, sometimes you dream something and the reality doesn't look the way you think it's going to be. What's your approach with that of when to learn to like let a whole genus go?
Usually if I am growing one and it dies, I'll usually spend a little bit of time researching it. I pretty much exclusively grow succulents, so I will throw that out there. So at this point, I'm pretty familiar with most of the different genera, but I'll usually research that individual plant or the genre or the genus that it's in and just see if it's probably my fault that it died or if it's maybe just, like you're saying, it's just the environment and I can't provide that environment. That actually plays a really big role now in the plants that I buy, where it's like, oh, I can tell that, you know, this one is probably not going to, it's going to take a lot of extra work for it to thrive in my climate. And I don't want to put that extra work in. So I think there's a balance there. If you kill one, maybe figure out why you killed it and learn a little bit more about it and decide if you can make a few adjustments and you think you can keep growing it. Awesome. Go for it. But if as you dive into it, you realize like, oh, this needs a high humidity climate. My house is super dry. It's probably not a good one to repeat purchase unless you just want to treat it like it's, you know, like cut flowers of sorts, right? If you buy it with the intent that it will die, you'll care for it however best you can. But in the end, it's not going to survive. My mother-in-law does that with orchids. She's like, I love orchids and they cost the same as a bouquet of flowers. And I throw away the bouquet of flowers at the end. So I'm just going to do that with orchids. Just let it bloom as long as it will and then let it go at that point.
Not stress about needing it to rebloom. Yeah, I think it's a mindset thing totally as well. If you do have one, you know, if you bring a plant home and you kill it and you decide that you want to try again and tinker with things, I think the next time that you bring it home, you need to kind of have a more gentler approach of being like, this could work or this could. Like, we're in an experimental phase and we're going to play with our curiosity and we're going to let this be fun and see if it works instead of like being so hard on yourself if, oh my God, it's the second time I tried to care for this plant and it didn't work. Like, I think we all are just like so much harder on ourselves. Like that's self-talk, man. No one is as mean to you as you are, you know? So like allowing that mindset shift. And then also the mindset of being like, just like what you said, you know what? This is a beautiful plant. This plant would do so great in my friend's house, but for my house, it's just not going to work. And that's okay. And I can still love that plant. And that's cool. Maybe I'll buy the plant for my friend, right? Or if I'm ever given an alocasia, if I buy an alocasia, I go, oops, I did it again. This plant isn't going to work for me, but I know that my friend has an IKEA grow cabinet that's super humid and, you know, perfect for an alocasia. Maybe that's an opportunity to gift it. So another thing I wanted to chat with you about is, you know, I think there's a lot of power in recognizing a plant fail is coming, like recognizing a plant death is coming. And maybe you identify, hey, you know, you're actually in this space right now where you've identified, hey, my collection has gotten way too big for me. I'm reducing. How do you reduce? Are you tossing stuff? Are you gifting stuff? What are the different ways that, you know, people can kind of reduce their collections if they need to once they've made those assessments?
Yeah. So this, I think there's a little bit of mindset involved with this too, because sometimes I'm like, well, if I'm giving a plant away, why would somebody else want it? Especially if it's not in like tip top health, right? But if it's still good enough where it can keep growing, like you're saying, it's easy enough to say, okay, I'm downsizing. Who wants a new plant? So usually, I was going to say, usually I'll start with friends. I think at this point, I'm pretty aware that most of my friends don't want more plants.
I know, me too. They're like, enough, Maria.
No more. Or, yeah. You know, or they're afraid they'll kill it. And I remind them, like, I have more. I can replace it in a few weeks if it dies. One of my favorite ways, though, honestly, is our local Buy Nothing group on Facebook. So I think they have these all over the place. And
yes,
they may not be in the same form, but I will just put a little table out on my porch and put a bunch of succulents or plants, you know, in pots out there. And sometimes I just do the pots if I have extra pots and just set them out and take a picture and say, hey, anyone who wants to come, you know, come pick up a few pots. And it's awesome because then I don't even have to travel beyond my front porch and someone else is super happy that they get this new plant. Another way I've done it, which I realize not everyone has this option, is every once in a while I'll do like a giveaway for our Succulent Lovers Club. I actually just did this a few weeks ago where I have a ton of Haworthias that have a bunch of babies. And so we did a repotting party and I unpotted this succulent and had people guess how many babies were in it. And then I gave away some of the babies to whoever guessed the closest. And so that was fun too. But I think just looking for plant groups, asking neighbors, asking friends. And if you can't find people, just totally letting them go is also okay. One other place that I have gifted them, not as frequently, but a lot of times schools, especially elementary schools or middle schools, will want plants that they can, you know, do a workshop on with their kids, or some of them will have a little garden space. So that's another fun one too, that you can kind of donate. You could also sell, same thing like through Facebook Marketplace or Craigslist or something. I know people will buy succulents and I'm sure other plants through Facebook groups and different things if you want to try and recoup some of your costs.
I've heard of people going to their local nursing homes as well and gifting them to nursing homes, which I think is super sweet. Restaurants, right? I feel like there's 10 restaurants in my town where if I brought some plants to them, they'd be like, oh my God, thank you. This would be so great. And then another thought, you know, something that I've thought, and this is like a little deep, but like something I've thought and meditated on too, on like death, like when we lose someone, but also with plants, is like in the woods, you know, I'm surrounded by woods now, you know, you see a fallen tree, but then you realize that that fallen tree decomposes and turns into the nutrients that feed the trees around it, or it decomposes and becomes a habitat for the other animals in the forest. And, you know, that tree can become something else. If you have compost available to you, like composting those plants in order to use them for, you know, use that fertilizer, that compost for your garden. I just got a tabletop composter, the Lomi, that I'm obsessed with, that, you know, actually turns stuff into dirt. It turns the Lomi, like, will turn your food scraps into dirt that you can pot stuff up in. But I also think, you know, if you have compost available to you, like there's something very poetic in that, or the garbage. Obviously, you want to try and reduce your waste. We have woods too. So I'm known now to just like fling a plant into the woods and be like, return to the earth, like return to from whence you've came. But, you know, I think it's another mindset of figuring out, okay, it's time for me to not have this plant, but like, what is the next iteration of this plant, whether it's being with someone or whether it's, you know, returning to the earth, or just like, you know, flushing your fish down the toilet, like just, you know, it's just like the next season of life. And sometimes too, like a plant death, you know, I recently let go of all of my ferns. So my first public TV, live TV appearance was on Access Live in 2020. And I had to do this like presentation for Mario Lopez. And, I had to go out and buy ferns for this presentation because I didn't have any, because I know myself and I know that ferns don't thrive in my life. And I bought a bird's nest fern and a blue star fern and a maidenhair fern and I think an asparagus fern. And I needed it for this presentation. And then for the last 2 years, like I've spent a lot of time trying to keep these plants alive. I bought terrariums, like I bought glass domes, cloches to try and keep my ferns alive. Like I've done my best. I did my best. I had an emotional attachment to those plants because I'm like, these are my Access Live. These are my Mario Lopez plants. Like these plants are my reminder that I was on national TV. How great. And, you know, recently I just kind of let go of them and I just looked at them. They didn't look happy. I hated having to water them. Like I hated having to special bottom water the bird's nest fern. And when I don't bottom water the majority of my other plants. And, you know, it felt kind of freeing to just be like, okay, like I release you and everything's okay. And like, you know, I understand I was attached because of that experience, but that once these plants are gone, doesn't really mean anything. Like I still have my YouTube video of like me being on TV. You know what I mean?
Yes. Well, it's interesting because one of the things that I have noticed, especially over the last few weeks, as I'm working on like whittling down my collection, there's a lot with plants dying that relates really well to decluttering. And I have a really good friend who teaches people how to declutter and helps them declutter. And there's been a couple of times where she'll post on Facebook, she's like, it's okay to just throw it in the trash. You don't have to repurpose, reuse, recycle everything. And obviously, I think there's like a balance to it, but I think we get so much of that pressure in our head where we're like, oh, I can't throw it away. I spent money on it. Or, you know, it's just going to waste. And then you kind of have to think, but like how much mental space is it taking up? How much stress and anxiety is it adding to my life that's causing waste in other ways? And, you know, just being able to let it go, I like to think that the plants that I put in the trash are helping with the composting. My composting efforts have not been very good. So that's why I think end up going in the trash more that way. But yeah, I think it does really come down to a lot of it's just a mindset thing of figuring out how is it going to feel comfortable for you to let this go? What's the easiest way for you to do it? And then just move forward, just take the plunge.
Yeah, that reminded me something. First off, you reminded me why I brought up my fern story. Because at the end, I was like, why the hell did I just tell the story? It was because I got rid of the three ferns. It made space for me to bring in plants that I actually wanted to take care of. Yes. Like it got to the point where I was not enjoying the ferns anymore. They were stressing me out. They didn't look good. I wasn't enjoying them. I threw them in the woods. And then I brought back like Hoya, and I love my Hoya, and I'm having so much more fun. I'm exploring that genus right now. So I'm really enjoying, you know, doing that. But I didn't want to expand my plant collection. So I was holding on to these ferns that weren't bringing me joy, that were stressing me out. And because I didn't want to get more plants, I wasn't able to bring those new Hoya in. But when I was able to let go of those ferns, I was able to bring in some new stuff. And the other thing that I wanted to mention is from an investment standpoint, I think a lot about, and this is also because I'm really good at rationalizing purchasing of clothes, but cost per wear is something that you talk about when you're buying shoes or you're buying clothes, you know, okay, this dress costs $100, but I'm going to wear it, you know, 10 or 15 times. So really the dress costs $10, you know, to $15 a wear. And if you think about that with a plant, you spend $20 on a plant and you have that plant for 365 days or years on end. If you think about the cost per day of enjoying the plant and the positive time that you spent with it, I think that's also a nice way of reframing when you get really attached to, oh my God, this plant costs so much money. But I also think what you just said, what I just wrote down is that the mental clutter, the mental cost of holding on to something that doesn't serve you anymore.
Yeah. Well, and I think of it a lot like food. I mean, obviously you can grow plants that can be food, but we spend so much money every month on food that nourishes us physically, right? And I think to your point of having this plant that you can enjoy for however long it's alive, to me, that's a lot of mental and kind of spiritual nourishment that you're getting from it. I think we just don't see it in the same way because we're not like physically consuming the plants the same way we do food.
Yeah, interesting.
But it really is the same way. Like it's a different type of medicine, if you will, that just helps you feel good. And so if it's not doing that, get rid of it.
If you're buying it to make you feel good and it's not making you feel good, what the heck are you doing?
Yep.
Totally. I think what you said, this whole conversation is so interesting. And I think this conversation around, you know, plant death and plant fails and that you don't need to make it mean something about you. I remember in my book, that's like the chapter that I have on plant death is like, when you kill a plant, you have two options. Option one is to let it mean something about you and like kind of ruin or affect your relationship with all of your plants, or two, just view it as a learning opportunity and marvel in like the positive effect that one plant death could have on your entire, you know, collection. And I think, you know, something we both kind of touched on is this concept of seasons. And, you know, our plants go through seasons. We experience seasons. I'm sitting watching so much snow come down outside my window as we're talking right now. And we experience those seasons too. It's very natural to go in and out of cycles where you are obsessed with your plants and then you're in another season where you forget to water them and they all get mealybugs and you're like, wait, what the hell? I'm supposed to be good at this. But you are good at this. You're just in a different season of life. You have the capacity. Everybody has the capacity to be a plant parent, right? It's just about the right timing.
Yeah, for sure. Something else I've seen kind of along that line too is also just, I feel like plants in general help us connect with other people. And I know for me personally, the idea that my plant is dying makes me think that people are going to think I'm a horrible person or, you know, pass judgment.
Yeah.
While that may exist, it's been so fascinating when I have shared like a YouTube video or an email about my succulents that died. I get so many responses from people saying like, oh, thank you for sharing this. Now I feel so much better that this plant that I have died, or I'm glad to know I'm not the only one. And oddly, I feel like for as many connections as I've made with people through the plants I'm growing, I've made just as many connections from the plants that have died. And having that
yes.
like, authenticity to say, dang it, I just killed this plant I spent $30 on. And someone's like, yeah, I spent $100 on a plant once and it died and it was so frustrating. And it's just, it's another way I think of connecting on a little bit deeper level too.
My God, that's so beautiful and so real. And plants are so emotional. I mean, every person I meet, every call I get on, when people say, what do you do? And I say, I have a podcast about houseplants and gardening. There's such polarizing responses. I either get, oh my God, I need your podcast. I kill every plant and I'm so bad at all this negative. I'm so bad at this. I'm a plant killer. Or my God, let me tell you everything about my plant collection right now. You know, like there's that connection and that polarity almost on either side. And yeah, I think that authenticity, I think that human connection over the positive and the negative is just a beautiful means for feeling seen, right? Feeling seen and being connected with someone. So sweet listeners, sweet plant friends, you're not a failure. We hope that we've given you some actionable things that you can kind of walk away. And the next time you experience a plant death, hopefully you can kind of shift your mindset. Cassidy, you have so much to offer in the plant space. If people don't already read your blog and, you know, subscribe to your newsletter and a part of your community, like where can everyone find you and start getting their succulent nerd on?
Yes. Well, the best place is at succulentsandsunshine.com or we're at Succulents and Sunshine, I think everywhere else. Probably the website and YouTube are the two main places where you'll get the most information.
Perfect. We'll have them all linked in the show notes. Thank you so much, my friend, for having this wonderful, fun, honest, vulnerable conversation. And also for our budding friendship, too. It's been so nice getting to know you this year.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. It's been awesome. Joy.
All right, plant friend, I hope that this episode makes you feel a little less alone when it comes to plant fells. They're part of the journey. Don't feel bad. You're doing amazing. I have a dead plant sitting in my green wall right now that I have to swap out. These things happen. And just learn from it and keep going. I hope that this was helpful. Go follow Cassidy at Succulents and Sunshine. She is awesome. And remember, every brown leaf, every pest outbreak, every lost plant is part of the growing process and an opportunity to learn. With that, I leave you to keep growing joy, no matter what your plant collection looks like these days. Plant friend, thank you for tuning in today. It means so much to me that I get to be part of your planty journey. If you like what you heard, make sure you're subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. We have so many incredible interviews and solo episodes on incredible houseplant and gardening topics that you will not want to miss this year. And while you're over there in the podcast player subscribing, why don't you click over to the review section of Growing Joy with Plants and leave us a review? Reviews are tremendously helpful for the growth of the podcast, so thanks in advance. If you're looking for more opportunities to grow as a plant parent with Growing Joy content, we've got so many options for you. First, I highly recommend you taking the Plant Parent Personality Test. It's free. It's super fun. It takes 3 minutes to complete. At the end of the test, you're going to get your plant parent personality profile and a curated list of plants, projects, and podcast episodes that are right up your alley, tailored just for you and your lifestyle, inspired by your results. The links are in the show notes. If you're looking to uplevel your plant parent game, I have so many free downloads on my website that I think could help you, like the Understanding Natural Light download or 9 different ways to green up your office space. If you'd like to support the show monetarily and help me bring the show to as many people as possible for free, you can head to our Patreon link in the show notes to learn more about our offerings. And finally, I invite you to come hang out with me and continue the planty conversation on social media, on Instagram and TikTok. I'm Growing Joy with Maria. My DMs are always open if you have requests for topics or ideas for the show. Thank you again for listening. It is truly my honor and delight to help you keep blooming and keep growing joy.